Welcome to the What's Haunting You podcast, where we work on healing that which haunts us. With me, Micah.
Hi. Hi. Welcome to the What's Haunting You podcast and the second half of the shadow work episodes. In the last episode, we addressed why we want to do shadow work and what shadow work is, especially according to the psychologists and psychiatrists, the mental health fields, and the dangers of having the wrong support on your healing journey, regardless how well-intentioned those intentions of support may be. Also, we talked about who should avoid shadow work without the assistance of a licensed mental health professional. So in this episode, we're going to address how to know when it's a good time to do shadow work and what can help you along your journey. And I will give an example of myself, a brief look into how my journey of shadow work came about, at least my awareness of it, because you actually do it a lot without realizing it whenever you take a step back and choose to respond to something instead of react. But in my journey of being more aware that I was doing shadow work, I had a very helpful tool that still helps me to this day. The tools will shift throughout your process as they should, and you should listen to prompts within yourself to change things up. If you stay in too attached to any one mode of healing or approach or something like that, then you're kind of getting stuck in a different way. It's important to challenge yourself to get new layers healed. Also, I think it's important to always acknowledge that we're listening to ourselves in the first place, which brings me to, when is a good time to do shadow work? Anytime you feel called to heal. If you trust yourself, that's a huge step. If you go within that and you feel a pull and you feel faith in yourself, you recognize that you're human and you'll have a lot to face, but it will no longer have power over you once you do face it, then you'll feel more in control of your life experience, as much as anyone can control it anyway. It reminds me of all the times, like I mentioned in the first episode too, of when you put something off. And how many times have you put something off, especially when it comes to yourself? And then once you address it, you're like, why did it take me so long? You almost exert more effort in resisting or avoiding something, and you put so much energy into doing that than if you just have the courage to face it, deal with it, and move on. And then it doesn't have a hold over you anymore. I'm all about knowing where my energy and power is. You know, the more triggered I am by someone else, then the more I'm giving my power away. Which brings me to another time that's a good time to do shadow work is when you're triggered. It is the most obvious and straightforward time to address your shadow. Because when you're triggered, for me, I'm like, all right, this is affecting me way more than it should. I'm giving this person way more emotional value than they deserve, you know, especially in this moment. Or they're not doing anything intentionally to hurt me. Why am I responding? Why am I feeling this reaction in my body? Why am I getting this worked up? You know, I'll ask those questions. What is it? What is this pointing to? You know? And then when I figure that out, I come up with an appropriate response. And if the other person also does their work frequently, they have an appropriate response by then. You're not just reacting to each other and making it bigger and bigger and worse, but you actually get to have a healthy healing conversation for you both. And you both grow a little. You both get to know yourselves and each other a little better. It never really ends, since our shadow is rooted in the most permanent parts of our brain. You know, those neural pathways that were developed when we were little are always going to be with us. But when you do the work, you create, and every time you pause and every time you have awareness to something you notice in you that's unhealthy, and you take a moment and you reflect and think, what can I do? Maybe you don't think of something in that moment yet, but you're still thinking, what can I do in the future to avoid this from happening again? And you can make a plan. If I'm triggered or I feel like this again, What can I do? With no judgment of yourself, because it was a necessary response at some point in your life. It just isn't serving you anymore. Major life transitions is another time that you might notice shadow work wanting to come up to be addressed, especially transitions that are inevitable as we age, as we face our mortality, midlife crisis. Also, anytime we're feeling the need to explore any unacknowledged desires, usually mortality has that effect on us. We have an unacknowledged desire for some sort of life change, or we need more independence, or we don't feel like we're truly able to express ourselves the way we need to. We want more self-expression. I kind of felt like that for a long time. I mean, I had health stuff I had to address, which is why I wasn't consistent with my content creation. But now that I kind of have a handle on that, it's been nice, because then I had to address the layer of, what other excuse do I have to not make content? Am I worried about what other people think? And what people am I worried about? Because I really don't care what people think, but are there specific people in my life I'm worried about? And there were. And I had to say, you know what, though? I don't actually care. I would have cared 20 years ago, but I don't care now. And once I acknowledged that, then I was able to move on. And this is not easy, but I'm doing it because I need more self-expression, and I'm doing it for my granddaughter. I want to model for her what was modeled for me by my grandmother, that gives me the courage to make mistakes in front of people and to have to correct myself in front of people and laugh and not take yourself too seriously. You often see people make major life decisions when they're fixated on their age or some imaginary rule or ruler that society or somebody in their life, parents or something, religion, something set for them, and they start to shit on themselves. If you're shitting on yourself at certain stages of your life or anything, anytime shit is coming up a lot in your vocabulary, enough to where you're noticing it and it's related more to shame or guilt instead of a healthy dose of discipline, then your shadow is in control and it's trying to be heard, and you need to listen to what it's trying to tell you. What is it? Who is it you're afraid of letting down? And is it more important than compromising yourself? Because when you do shadow work, you start to learn what your boundaries are and finding healthy compromises with the people you love the most, as long as they're willing to do the same, right? Sometimes our body gives us signals. I kind of touched on that earlier. This for me is kind of like a chicken or egg situation too sometimes, because we don't always realize it, but an emotional trauma will cause a physical trauma in the body. Physical trauma, even when you're sick with a cold, it affects your mood, right? But the opposite, the vice versa, is also true. If you are dealing with an emotion or some stuck something, or you have a trauma happen that's not physical, but it's emotional or spiritual or psychological, then it gets locked in your body because it triggers all those same hormones and the nervous system, adrenaline, everything is happening and it gets locked away. And our fascia is like a recorder. It records everything. And we start to feel little sensations sometimes, and that usually will tell us, like I talked about in the first episode, if you don't listen to the whispers, it will become a scream. That happens in our psyche, but it also happens in our body, and everything's connected. So sometimes if we work on our body, we start to notice some repressed psychological stuff come up that needs to be addressed. But it is being addressed if you're doing the body work, right? And if you're doing psychological stuff, there have been times when people will talk about a trauma in therapy with a licensed professional, and they'll have manifestations of bruises and stuff happen while they're speaking, because it's a way of the body releasing something that was stored. And everyone's experience is unique and different. And it's so important when you go into a healing session to not have too much of an expectation, because you're only looking at it from the lens of your pain or what you're missing. And it blocks out potential that you can't see. So When we've known trauma, it can be difficult to hear the messages that our body is sending also, or to trust them. It goes back to the dissociation discussed in part one of the podcast. I talked more about that there, but we, because our body has sent those signals, we stop getting messages in certain parts of our body. And then that part of our body is being neglected and we can almost get numb, you know? So this reminds me of all the body work that I've done and have had done, and also working with massage therapists. It's amazingly shocking to me, at least in America, how many people want deep tissue massage. Oh, so for me, cranial sacral therapy changed my life. It healed me so much. But I would get massages and could barely feel something because I had so much stored trauma in my body and I didn't feel safe yet because I hadn't done enough of the psychological work yet to feel safe in my body. So you have that armor up and it's like, it's real and you can't even really feel anything. So you think the therapist needs to get deeper and deeper, and that's hard on the therapist. When really you might need an extremely gentle approach that works more with the fascial membrane, energy, healing, that sort of thing, make you feel safe to help regulate your nervous system, to get the tools you need to regulate your own nervous system. So when you do get a massage, you know what's happening with your body, you feel it, you have more control over how that's going without it having to be so aggressive and potentially harmful because it's too aggressive and it hurts the therapist. Another time is if you feel attuned to the natural cycles of the moon or the waning moon phase, that's a good time to work for shadow work. It's also a more introspective phase, kind of like right now. We're in the middle of an eclipse when I'm making these, eclipse season, which is all very, it's unearthing things. It brings things to the surface that need to be addressed. If you're noticing that, then it's time to roll with it and just remind yourself, just be aware and think to respond, not to react. If there's a lot of Scorpio energy in the air, Scorpio definitely supports shadow stuff, or any astrological energy, the more aligned with your chart, and following different astrologers helps me with that. But especially your moon sign, because it rules your emotions and your internal world. Different aspects of your body are related to different signs also. So you can check all of that and kind of, I like to see how I'm feeling or what I'm working through and then check the astrology. And that kind of gives me a sense of my own pattern and how my body and mind are in tune with things for future use, for future goals. You can use moon phases to set goals, to dig deeper on aspects of your psyche that you might want to explore. So let's talk about the different types of alternative healing that can help support and complement your healing journey. Knowing that any kind of alternative healing is only meant to complement healing that is already in progress. By relating and holding emotions, psychological, energetic, or physical space with the client. A coach works with someone who has already addressed their psyche but needs further support in how to implement changes in their everyday life. The client typically recognizes their potential, even if just by having an understanding of unhealthy patterns. They just need help seeing fresh perspectives, making goals, and having the tools to help them continue to move forward. First, I'm going to go back to body work and energy work because that's the thing that helped me the most. Maybe because in Chinese astrology, I am a yang earth born in the year of the wood rabbit. So I'm very body oriented, and my Venus in Taurus and my moon in Taurus, I'm very tactile, sensual type of a individual. So that approach worked best for me. Talk therapy, not as much, but I do have to talk things out in order for me to process them. And sometimes I did like having someone like a coach to just talk through something I'm trying to process to bounce it off of them. so that we can make goals together and I can move forward, right? Because again, this is focusing, coaching is future self and present to future self. Whereas the therapy, licensed therapist stuff, working on past things and how they're impacting your present self, which should always be addressed first by a licensed therapist. And I already talked about how our fascia records everything, and the human body does need assistance discharging what is causing blocks or stagnation in our body and subsequently in our healing process. Animals in the wild will get attacked. Let's say a lion attacks a gazelle and it gets that adrenaline surge. Animals, if they survive it, will shake it off. If they don't, they'll die. Humans don't shake it off. We absorb it, and we absorb it, and absorb it, and absorb it. And we need help with someone to help facilitate discharging that sometimes. Sometimes there are other ways of doing it, but a lot of times we might need, especially with touch, because touch is very, and this kind of work can be done through distance, through video, like talking. I can talk to somebody through like FaceTime sort of a situation and do it. But the physical touch at some point needs to come into the picture a lot of times, unless the trauma is related to that. And then maybe wait and wait until you feel comfortable after getting more in-depth therapy around that. But an energy worker or body worker can facilitate releasing any residual residue recorded in the body or in the energetic field, while also holding the intention of the client's current goals and intentions. Intentional body work is important because old narratives can get trapped in our body too. Flushing the tissue and the cerebrospinal fluid that goes up and down the spine and around our brain and subsequently throughout our entire body is kind of like clearing your cache and cookies and rebooting your hard drive after a system update. There's really nothing like it. My biggest thing I think I do for clients when I've done it is I get a lot of people who can't sleep. And then after a session with me, they sleep forever. And they need it and they love it. But again, only a licensed professional should be the one to assist in exploring the past influence on a person. You don't need to talk or explore. And a lot of times when you're getting body work done, usually you're not going to have like some traumatic thing come up consciously that needs to be addressed in the moment. That's not a typical response. Usually there are physical responses though. You know, there can be anything from yawning to laughing and not knowing why, or crying, shaking. I get hardcore tremors. I practically convulse on the massage table when I get cranial sacral therapy, because I have so much discharge in my nervous system that has to be released all the time. So everybody's different, and how you respond changes from session to session too. You might get a little queasy, but that just means it's kind of like if you're holding your fist for a long time, I tell people, and you squeeze and squeeze and squeeze almost to the point where you're numb, and then you open your hands and it kind of aches and hurts. That's kind of what happens when you start to release that tension. It might feel a little like, ugh, at first. And it's detoxifying, which can also make you queasy. Any kind of detoxing thing can make you queasy. But it goes away. Your intention is to send it into the earth for it to transmute it. If you're worried about the earth, you can use crystals and energy healing on the earth around you where you've worked to heal that too. And there's a really cool person I follow that does that kind of thing. She's really awesome. And I can, I'll try to remember to put her links in the comment notes, show notes. But yeah, I think body work is integral, but that's because I think that I have seen, especially as a toe reader too, how pathology grows over time when something isn't addressed, and you can see it. You can see in somebody's feet. I can look at someone's feet and see it. So yeah, I think paying attention to your body is important. And if you don't feel something, that in itself is a clue. my awareness of my shadow work kind of began more, the journey began more around the time I really began to recognize my own patterns, my own unhealthy patterns. I was trapped in a situation that was incredibly toxic and abusive. And then I lashed out in ways that were unhealthy for me and everyone around me. And I got sick of my own crap. So I started trying to figure out what to do. And I had read the book, The Gift of Fear, to understand my relationship with fear, because I was living in fear a lot, but rightly so in that moment. And the book, The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker, literally saved my life. It gave me the tools to understand what fear is healthy and will help you, and how fear can be debilitating to where you make all the wrong decisions in life, and how you're actually hurting yourself by being overly fearful. I can't recommend that book enough. I was going to hold it up, but I don't have it because I keep giving it away every time I buy it. And then after that, I had a dream that played a huge role. Dreams have always played a big role for me. And I don't know, I still don't know. Is it my unconscious, my subconscious that's kind of recognizing patterns that my conscious mind hasn't picked up yet? Is it guides? Is it ancestors? I don't know. Does it matter? They're helping. And whatever helps is great, right? Just say thanks. But the first indication that my shadow self was really ready to be recognized and addressed more deeply, that I can recollect anyway, began with a dream I had around late 2009-ish. I wrote about it in a blog because it impacted me so much, because I wanted to remember it. It was a core memory unlocked. It felt like a call to something deeper at the time, even though I didn't fully understand it. And this was right before I was invited to start trauma therapy training. So you'll see how this kind of plays out, but I'm going to share this part with you because you'll understand how it played into my visualization later. I like connecting dots. It helps me. The more you connect dots, the more you can release stuff, right? So go with me on this. I'm going to read this to you because this is what I wrote back in late 2009 as I'm beginning to open up to myself. Sliding the glass door open, all I could see was darkness. I first hear the gentle chirp of crickets from a distance, and suddenly the smell of honeysuckle overwhelms me. The fragrance was so strong, it beckoned me to step outside. I closed my eyes and stepped out onto the damp grass, feeling the cool, crisp desert air. The feeling that only the surrounding desert can give on a cool spring night. As the crisp, wet blades of grass surrounded my toes and the budding honeysuckle's fragrance seemed to envelop me, I felt memories flooding into my mind. Closing my eyes again as I inhaled the night air and all that surrounded me, I began to hear the sound of what sounded like an old 8mm film rolling in the background, drowning out all other sounds. I can see myself, little me, about 3 years old, eagerly running towards the camera with a big pink ball, distinctly remembering the little jumper I was wearing, tiny yellow and white checks, I think, jumper shorts with little daisies as the buttons that held the straps that went over my shoulders. I can see my light blonde pigtails placed perfectly on either side of my head, directly below the crown, but you can tell that there was care to not place them directly on the sides, just a bit higher. The pigtails bounce wildly as I run towards the camera, holding this big pink ball that's bigger than I am. You can tell walking and running with a giant ball is somewhat new to me, as my toes curl tightly to the little white sandals on my feet, clinging tight. Just as quickly, I run away again, looking for someone to play with me, as it's obvious whoever is holding the camera is not willing to do so. And just like that, my eyes open to the sound of the end of an 8mm reel snapping wildly. Just like that, memory's gone, and I'm a grown woman. And just like that, I envy that little girl and all her innocence and feel compelled to hold and protect her. But I am that little girl. I'm that little girl with the big pink ball wanting to run and play and laugh. I'm just in a grown-up body with grown-up responsibilities and worries. So I turn around to go back inside, imagining that big pink ball all alone in the desert sand, wanting someone to pick it up. And I close the door on the ball and the little girl. So that was my dream that I had around then. And it, you can see why maybe it kind of opened something in me. And within a year or so, I was in school studying holistic psychology. I was already doing the trauma training classes, and I wanted to learn more about how to get certified and stuff in different healing modalities to help support people on their journey. And I was doing a visualization exercise to kind of explore my shadow with no expectations or judgment. And then this is what I saw during that visualization. When I close my eyes, I take a few diaphragmatic breaths and see myself walking in darkness, holding a torch or lantern. I can't remember which. Trying to see something. I hear my breathing, but I also hear the deep, low breath of something else. I'm reminded of the sound of horses, the sound horses make when they blow through their noses. And that's what I hear as I step closer to that breathing sound. I begin to see a large figure take shape, and golden red scales begin to shimmer against my torch light. A large dragon lowers its head towards me and begins to widen its stance as if it's guarding or protecting something. I feel my fear and remind myself that this is my dragon. It's working for me, not against me. As the dragon lowers its head, I pause to make eye contact long enough for it to get a sense of me, kind of like you would a horse. I then cautiously raise my hand to gently place it on the creature's snout. The dragon allows it, but still watches me carefully. But because I'm closer, I can start to see something behind it. Hiding behind the dragon's large tail, I see a little girl with wide, big blue eyes and blonde pigtails. I carefully but deliberately begin to take steps around the dragon towards the girl. She sheepishly comes around the tail to face me. The dragon is overseeing every movement as smoke-filled snorts periodically remind us both that it's there to do its job. The little girl is trembling and scared, and I know that it's me when I was little. It's little Micah. I get down on my knees and set the torch down, and in the barely lit darkness, I open and outstretch my arms. Little Micah runs into my arms and begins to sob softly because she's so not used to being held. So I just hold her. I hold her, noticing her once tense little body gradually relax. We make eye contact with one another as I assure her, without needing to say anything, that she's found, she's seen, she's accepted, appreciated, and will be loved in the way that she needs. She will always have me. I sit down and place her in my lap, letting her rest her head on my chest. The dragon remains standing over us, both with knowing. Sometimes I cry. I've cried it. I wrote it and didn't cry. I got emotional reading it. But it is a quick visualization that snaps me back into a more logical reality. It helps me address that unmet need in the moment so that I can think more clearly. I can hold me. I can hold space for me. I can see everything with more logical reality of what's going on so I don't get lost in my feelings. Sometimes I thank the dragon for reminding me about boundaries when I need it, because that's what the dragon is doing. It stands over us both at the end because it is going to hold boundaries for us both. And it's going to protect us both. That's what those boundaries do. It also invites love in when healthy love presents itself. And that's all aspects of love. It always helps, though, to know that even if I didn't get what I needed when I was little, I can acknowledge that it really sucks. And I can grieve what I never knew while also giving me what I needed then and what I need now. Imagine a world where everyone addresses their shadow self as soon as they're old enough to learn and feel safe doing so. How differently would we be treating ourselves and each other? So that's the end of my thoughts on shadow work. I'm sure I'd have more with questions. So have you done shadow work? Do you have tips, pointers you'd like to share? Anything you'd like me to share? You can make in a comment or again, message me with questions, topics you'd like me to address in the future. Again, the email you can send them to right now is whathauntsyou@gmail.com. I really appreciate you letting me share my story. It's not easy, but I think it's important we share our vulnerabilities. We can be private, but also vulnerable. It's a fine, beautiful, delicate dance in life. But it's an important one if we want to know love and feel love. Thank you.